This is an ArmorPod production. Send all production inquiries to armorpod@gmail.com. Hey, it's Josh Armour here from the Wrestle Radio Australia Network. Thank you for pressing play on this episode of AxeCast with Josh the Axe Shooter and his special guest Mikey J. Just want to let you guys know that you can subscribe to the Wrestle Radio Australia Network on iTunes. You can follow us on iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio and Stitcher and wherever all good podcasts are available for free. Absolutely free. You get the AxeCast, you get Where the Action Is, which was also known as WRA with myself, Josh Armour, and various co-hosts and many great guests. You got Drawing Heat with Beej and the Dude, who cover all the great stuff happening over in the West with EPW Perth and Schwa. Healing Out with Muhammad Ali Vaez, which has been on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, but there is some awesome interviews there with the likes of Crackerjack, JXT, Josh Shooter, Mr. Anderson, Ricardo Rodriguez, and some great Aussie talent. So do go and check out those episodes here on the Wrestle Radio Australia Network, and they're all free. Check us out on Facebook, of course, Wrestle Radio Australia Network, and on Twitter at Wrestle Radio AU. But for now, here is the new AxeCast with Josh the Axe Shooter and Mikey J. It's a great chat.
First ever six-star professional wrestling podcast.
If only I could turn the exposure from this into profit, I'd be set and broke also. fuck. Off to a great start. Mikey J, the man in demand at MCW, large and in charge. He's come from managing professional wrestling talent. He's come from recording as a fan, he's come from promoting to booking into a Lucha Libre backstage locker room at the Colonial Hotel while they have schnitz and tits downstairs.
I tell you what, as the last Australian guest on the Axe Pod...
That was the worst intro on the fly.
Should we redo it?
Nah! Fuck it.
You sure?
Yeah.
Alright, as the last Australian guest on the Axe Pod, I feel delighted to be here.
Thank you.
I feel honoured. I feel privileged. This could possibly be my greatest achievement of all.
Lockie Hendry.
Hello!
Yes, Lockie's sitting in, hoping to learn a thing or two about management.
And the maybe. Biz.
Yep, the biz.
The business.
The biz. The biz.
Easy. Starting at the very start, so as a fan, and then going down to PCW.
The first time I ever went to an Australian wrestling event was in 2001. And one of the main marquee matches was Rowan Herbstreet versus Chucky Chaos in a street fight.
Rowan?
Yes, Rowan Herbstreet. He was involved in the All-Star Wrestling promotion, along with future Melbourne City Wrestling creative genius Chris Fresh, Sebastian Walker, and a few of those guys. Crackerjack was still in his rookie year. And as part of sort of, you know, that management versus wrestler Austin Vince sort of angle, Rowan was embroiled in a feud with Chucky's. So the first time I ever went to an Australian wrestling show, I saw guys taking pratfalls through two tables, barbed wire Christmas trees and all the rest. And I was very impressed.
You thought it was the norm?
I knew that it was something special. I knew not every show was going to have stuff like that happening. But yeah, so it was a great introduction. I mean, we're talking at a time where guys like Jag, Havoc, all these dudes are coming into the business and they're still quite young and they've got everything to prove. And you've got, you know, the real deal Steve O'Neill from Adelaide, Spike Steele, who was, you know, a rookie then as well. All these guys who were just doing incredible stuff that I didn't even realize was happening in my own backyard, essentially. I went to a couple of those shows. I knew Rowan through the WrestlingNetAU forums. I was a member on there, posted heaps, got to know Rowdy, Steve Pullen through there, and he was involved in PCW. So a couple of years later in 2004, I was introduced to him as being a guy who, knew his way around a video camera and would be interested in filming a local show.
So in between the 2-3 years there, you were just hanging out?
I attended a couple of shows, but like through 2002, 2003, I didn't really see much Australian wrestling.
Yeah.
So once All-Star went in mid-2002, that was kind of it for me, because I was living, you know, close to the city, and those shows were happening at Crown Casino, so it was easy for me to go down the road. And check these shows out, whereas PCW and PWA, like all these companies, are running out in Roville, and I barely even know where Roville is at the time, you know. So, yeah, I ended up going down to Roville to film. This was one of the first shows after everyone had just left to start PWA, and they'd all sort of left PWA, and PCW's kind of rebuilding. And I just remember the first time I walked into the Polish Club in Roville, Harry Hallander, Alex Hayes, is running the ropes. There's this raggedy ring, and he runs the ropes, and the top rope snaps, and he lands on his neck on the entranceway. And I was just thinking, all right, cool, let's just see how this goes. But I mean, I was just so happy to be at ringside, having a good seat in the house. I enjoyed doing the camera work. Like, I was just happy running around with a camera all the time anyway. Like, at that stage, you know, I'm 16, 17 years old, and I'm filming Jackass knockoffs with my mates at school, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm just happy being around the camera. It's like an extension of my arm at the time. Like, if something's going on that I'm interested in, I'm going to film it. So, yeah, having that chance just meant that I was able to, yeah, do a little bit of that, and kept doing bits and pieces. I wanted to do more, so started doing a little bit of video stuff for PCW. But it wasn't really until 2006 where Steve did the TWE experiment, where he had people from PWA, that my work started getting noticed. Like, I made a one-minute teaser sort of thing for TWE, and it had all the PCW guys, all the PWA guys, and everyone's just going, oh, this looks really good. This looks...
So the first time you kind of interacted with PWA guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, up until then, the main interaction that I was having with people was with, you know, Gambino, when he was posting on the No Holds Barred forums and just carrying on and being a bit of a spaz, and I was just kind of returning fire, which I know put me in bad stead with guys like Lobo and all that sort of thing at the time. But for me, I was defending, you know, the promotion that I was working
for. Your home brand.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. Like, I didn't know any better. It's just like, you know, if you guys are trying to shit on us, then I'll fire back a little bit. So, yeah.
It wasn't... And to be fair, it's probably a little on both sides there.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But, yeah, you know, like, it's easier if you're the head of another brand to just go, well, you're shitting on us. But, you know, like, at the time, I'd go to PWA shows, and I would, like, it was obvious that the quality of wrestling on those shows was more into what I was watching. Because PCW, like, you had guys like Tricky D and Daniel Swagger at the time who were doing good things. And then you compare some of those guys with some of the older dudes who are there and kind of just doing a real punch kick sort of
match. Hold their spot type stuff?
Yeah. Not even holding their spot, but just kind of weren't that good at it without trying to shit on people too much. And then, like, I was watching a lot of, you know, 2006 Ring of Honor, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, just when those independent shows are getting really good. So then I'm going to PWA shows, I'm going, fuck, this is amazing. But yeah, like, you know, that sort of closed up before my time, and I had the chance to prove myself with the reunion show and all that sort of thing. So, you know, like, I was able to do a few good things, but it was a little bit too late. So, you know, that all just comes down to the politics of wrestling in general. But that's something that, you know, with Melbourne City Wrestling, we've tried to push back a little bit on.
Yep.
You know, so there's less of that. But I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more in depth later on.
It does sound like there was a choice to be made either way, and there would be wins and losses if you were with PWA, hypothetically.
Of course.
And you may have had bad terms with PCW, or vice versa.
It was one of those things where it was one or the other. And I understand having your own brand with your own exclusive talent and production and all that sort of thing. But, you know, like, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm just happy filming, you know.
I just
want to film for people and do a good job and get the product out there, because, you know, first and foremost, even now, I'm a fan. So it's something that where I've always just wanted to see, I suppose, wrestling in this country grow. And I just wanted, you know, back then I just wanted to try and get it out there, which is why for a lot of those years after PCW and PWA closed, like, I was working for anyone and everyone who would book me. Like, I'd be going to... A standard weekend might see me do a Friday night show in Canberra and then a Saturday night show in Brisbane or something like that, just filming, or for the brief period that I was managing, you know, I might be doing one of those on my other shows and filming elsewhere, or doing Swan Hill and then coming back to Melbourne the next night and all that sort of thing. Like, it was just something where I just wanted to be on the road. I wanted to be improving myself as a cameraman, as an editor, and yeah, just kind of doing video packages where if people were stumbling across them, they'd be going, this is pretty good.
And then it redirects you to other links and other videos, and then Australian wrestling grows from there. That was the aim, it sounds like.
You never know who's going to see this stuff. And that works both in a positive and a negative. Like, if you do something really bad, you never know who it's going to gain traction with, and you don't know how that will, I suppose, tar the rest of the industry here with the same brush. But if you do good stuff, then that's a real precursor to your product getting noticed, certain guys within your product getting noticed, and all that sort of thing.
And, of course, growing on that now, you have MCW On Demand?
Yeah. So, I mean, we started doing the MCW Video On Demand pay-per-view sort of service about nearly 3 years ago now.
I think a lot of other companies caught onto the Vimeo On Demand, where you could rent or buy.
We weren't the first to do it. We were one of the first, but we weren't the first to do it. But yeah, we've also followed in the footsteps. Like, I know EPW launched a subscription service a little while back, and I sort of thought, well, we should probably be doing this instead as well, of just, you know, putting all of our shows where people pay X amount just to rent or download. So we launched the new version of MCW Encore, I want to say, 2 weeks ago, almost, at the time of this recording. And yeah, like, that's doing okay. You know, we had 20 subscribers in the first week, which is... It's reasonable for something new where you don't know if people are going to put their money down, because there's a lot of things that people can spend their money on. There's a lot of on-demand services, you know. No one's watching free-to-air, but everyone's paying for services like Netflix, the WWE Network, Progress On Demand. Adding MCW Encore to the mix is another thing where some people might be spending $40 or $50 every month for on-demand content anyway. So the fact that, you know, the fact that we get anyone, I'm humbled and thankful for.
It comes down to a fan could spend $30 a month on transport, food, and a show ticket to go see MCW, and then they may be spending an extra $10 a month from there to have on demand. So it does add up at the end of the day, but the value you do get for the $10 is quite unbelievable. Where shows you could just buy for $10 by itself, you can now have access to the whole library.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, we're still uploading all the content from the library, but again, that just comes down to what I believe in putting out a product is that it should be as top of the class as you can make it. You know, it should be as professional as you can get it. It should be slickly edited. It should look good. It should have all the audio recorded properly. It shouldn't just have one hard camera or a ringside camera that's run by a rookie that just points at everyone's feet for most of the match. You know what I mean? Like, I pride myself and I pride MCW on having one of the best productions for certainly independent wrestling in Australia, but, you know, I would stack up some of the edits of those shows. And I'm not just saying this because I've put them together as one of my many hats. I would stack them up against a lot of independent wrestling products that you can watch either on DVD or on demand anywhere in the world.
Hopefully you get some traction anyway, because I've seen some other on-demand services, and without being biased, I do agree in that statement completely. But you were mentioning going to Canberra, going to Queensland, just travelling around, even Swan Hill. It does sound like it was fun, and you were building up experiences. You were younger at the time, and you were still learning your craft. I used to watch the highlight videos, whether it was the EPW highlight videos, whether that was you or not, or the highlight videos of PWA at the time.
Yeah, I wasn't doing the EPW ones. That was by, I'm pretty sure, Rick.
Banger?
No, a guy called Rick from out in Perth. He was the guy who put on the NWA tour at the end of 2007 over there, where they got, you know, Brian Danielson, Claudio, X-Pac, you know, all these guys out, and like they had me involved over there shooting them, and it was one of the best weekends of my life.
Okay,
to this day, it was so much fun.
So wait, what did that involve? If it was Claudio Clay Castagnoli, which is Cesaro now.
Yep.
Bryan Danielson.
Yep.
Which everyone knows.
Yep.
Who else was there? Joey Ryan. DDT champ.
Yep. So X-Pac was there. Carl Anderson was there. They were meant to get Fergal Devitt over at the time, but that
would
fell
good.
Through. That fell through for whatever reason. Rocky Romero was there. It was such a good time, and because I was one of two interstaters along with Spike Steele. Jag was there as well, but you know, he was pretty much an AEW guy all the time anyway. But yeah, I just remember that they put us up in the hotel with all these guys, and I was there with Ash Wright, who many long-time Australian wrestling aficionados will remember. And
one more Wright.
one more Ash. We sort of just threw a party in the hotel room, filled up the shower with a whole lot of ice and shitty pre-mixed drinks, because don't forget I was 20 years old at the time.
There's nothing wrong with cruises.
So double blacks were all the rage for me at the time. You know, I would just invite the boys over and just shoot the shit and whatever else. And, you know, when you're that young and you're sort of carrying on and everyone's on an even playing field, like, it's a lot of fun, you know, and... Yeah, it's just one of those things for me. It was like, that was a learning curve, you know.
It was, but you were highly proud of it, and even to this day it does sound like you were proud.
Of course. And if you're a fan of, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, I'll throw in a free plug. You can watch it on EPW's video on demand service on Vimeo as well. Like, it's well worth tracking down.
Now, I've heard you tell the story of the duck Joey.
it was just one of these dumb little things. Like, Joey Ryan and Carl Anderson were teaming together, and Carl Anderson would cut a promo, and then he'd just sort of yell out, you know, duck Joey, and he'd pretend to fire a machine gun. And on night two, like, I was just in the ring filming their promo, because, you know, who wants to try and film through the ropes? And he yells out duck Joey, and like, just on instinct, I just sort of dropped down as well while he's pretending to fire this imaginary machine gun.
So, I'm sure it would have made
you
say.
So I was just pretending to sell it as well. Like, it was just one of those things, and it's like, oh, you know, whatever.
It's a little thing, but it adds to the smoke and mirrors, I'm sure.
Of course it does, you know. I don't know if it popped anyone else, but...
Yeah. It would have popped him. That's all that matters.
You'd hope so.
The boys.
You'd hope so.
Easy. So, looking into your creativity aspect. So, we've touched on the videography and everything else. Moving into booking and management now. Is there anything that does reflect your proudest moments, your most creative moments? Whether it's the RCW storyline, whether that was early days of MCW.
It
could even be a person in particular, whether it's building a character around maybe the world's friendliest bastards for hypothetical sake.
A lot of the time, I've been really lucky to have a good group of people who've been working with me and who are as passionate about MCW as I am. You know, like I mentioned Chris Fresh before, his impact on MCW cannot be understated. Like, he was such a big part of the company from end of 2013 to the end of 2016. And, you know, when he came on, our shows were not doing so great. Like, we're running this venue in Tullamarine with just crappy yellow walls and with, you know, a pretty skeletal roster. Like, I'm sure Lucky over there would remember when he came in, the MCW then. And you'd remember as well, Josh, the MCW then was not the MCW that it is now. Everyone was kind of keen, but at that stage, a little bit of the shine had rubbed off from when we sort of first burst onto the scene. You know, like, we were competing against Wrestle Clash and all that sort of thing at the time. So we were dealing with that and you know, a little bit more political drama, which no one needs to bother hearing about at the time. So I've always had a good group of people who have been working with me, and not just for me, everyone's working together to build the product. Like, that's the end game, to make the product better. So I've always had people who have shared that knowledge and really put everything into it. Some of the stuff that, you know, I'm proud of, you know, even going back to 2011 when we had Tennille Taylor, who's now Emma in WWE, we had her for her last series of matches on the Independence. And it would have been easy for us to just go, here she is, she's leaving soon, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I sort of went, well, why don't we just flip the script on it, have her come out and say that she's going, and then have her say, and she got to this point without any of the fans. So we kind of, you know, flipped things around and had her working as a heel instead. And that was just something that, you know, it was a little bit outside the box for people at the time. And it was just something that...
enough to turn heads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, yeah, it's just to get a little bit of attention, just to do something different. Because, you know, like a lot of people in independent wrestling work everywhere anyway.
I think in that time when we were still at the Tullamarine venue, there was a few other companies, and they were all just putting on wrestling shows where they had maybe the main event that had a storyline, they had the main belt, tag belt, and everything else. Do I have this show? Come in there, get your paycheck and leave.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, for me and for Chris and for James and everyone else who's involved, you know, like Jay Andrews has been a huge part of MCW's success as well. I'm not sure if I mentioned him before, but it would be remiss of me not to. You know, like, our philosophy's always been, okay, these guys could work elsewhere, but the best stuff that you see from them will be at Melbourne City Wrestling. You know, that's always been one of the things that we try to do. I know Chris is especially proud of the TMDK angle, which we did last year, and so am I. Like, where, you know, for an independent, if you compare...
That's something I was going to elaborate on, because a long-term storyline for an independent company to run, not many people do more than 3 to 4 months.
No. And, yeah, we did a little bit longer than that. You know, we kind of knew what we had at our disposal. You know, we'd bring guys in just to do run-ins. Like, we had to fork out about $1,000 in flights a couple of days out from that ballroom brawl show where they all showed up and did their thing. And for most people, that would be a huge no-no. Like, we don't have the money to do this. But for us, it was something where we went, let's just take the risk, see how it goes. It's a big angle. It's going to form the cornerstone of what we do for a little while now. So we want to start off on the right foot. And we did.
You know, I can, like, justify it, because a lot of people will spend $1,000 on a no-name former WWE star, where you spend $1,000 on the flights instead, and then they come out, they tear up the ring, they tear up Edwin, Jonah Rock's going wild, Jag grabs the mic, and there's people willing to fight Jag over the barricade, because Jag on the mic is unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, we, you know, it was the same show where we had Diamond Dallas Page on, and... That was, you know, that was a great boost for us to be able to have him as a surprise.
Randomly come down about 10 minutes before he used to go out.
Yeah. Like, that was, you know, that was a big thing for us as well. But, you know, you compare the pop that DDP got on that show, and then you compare the audience reaction at the end of it, and it's virtually the same levels of heat that you've got. And it's just one of those things where a lot of, you know, it's not to crap on what anyone else does, but there's so much good talent here. And if they're booked correctly, and again, if you've got the video production and all that sort of thing to keep reminding people on what's going on, then you're doing the best that you can with what you have in your own backyard. And, like, you and I, Josh, like, we're obviously both fans of the product in the UK. Given your trips over there, myself with what we've done in the past in terms of, you know, booking guys like Jimmy Havoc, Marty Scurll, and soon Will Ospreay as well. Those guys, the promotions that have done really well over there, have done that using what they have at their disposal without necessarily bringing in all these extra people from overseas. It's one of those things where you've kind of got to believe in yourself and what you and your guys and your production guys and your promotion. And if you do that and you're doing everything right, everything else will follow, to the point that you will get people from overseas who will end up hearing a bit of the buzz and will then want to be a part of it.
I think what happened originally there was 1PW happened, where they would have a lot of internationals on the show with the English guys, and they would see how good the English guys are that did turn heads. And on the flip side, they had people like Zack Sabre Jr. and Doug Williams, Treble Abroad to TNA, even Dean Allmark at TNA briefly, and people were starting to realise these English guys had a style, these English guys were sent to the bar, and they were going from there, and they were wrestlers, and they held their own. And then it would travel back to England, and people would look into who else did they train with, who else have they wrestled, and it would go from there. The same thing could be said with Buddy Murphy at the moment, TM61, Carlo Cannon, when he originally left to go to Lance Storms and come back, people realised there was wrestling in Australia.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, that, like, your description of 1PW doesn't tell the full story. because they spent all their money on imports. They didn't build enough of their local guys, and eventually they suffered huge financial losses, and people just didn't give a shit about the product, seemingly, unless there were all these big-name imports in there. You know, like, you compare that to Progress, who I think had Colt Cabana on one of their earlier shows. Then they do a run of, what, 12 shows and then bring Samoa Joe in.
Yep.
And in that time, you're building up all these guys. You're putting faith in your homegrown talent, your homegrown production and all that sort of thing. And now they're one of the biggest, hottest, freshest independent promotions going.
And that's something they are quite proud of, the fact that they don't need international talent.
And so they should be. Like their big names now are your Pete Dunne's, you know, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate. Even Travis Banks, all these guys who are now making huge names for themselves. And it's because of the way they've built their promotion up and they've built their guys up. You know, like, it would be unheard of 5 years ago for an independent promotion anywhere in the world to be... to sort of have WWE in their pockets a little bit. And I know that might sound dismissive, but, you know, to have WWE going, we want your guys... We'll still let you have them on your shows. We want your on-demand content and all that sort of thing. Like, that's the ultimate payoff. And to me, that's something that...
Is a goal?
Oh, absolutely it's a goal. Like, to me, where we are now, people are going, oh, MCW's doing so well. I'm still not happy with that. And, like, look at it this way. You know, you're about to go to the UK, or you'll be in the UK by the time this hits. Are you happy with where you are now?
No, but I don't think anyone ever is. But that's the best thing about those that are complacent and those that constantly progress.
Spot on. You either want to be a big fish in a little pond or a little fish in a big pond. And it's one of these things where now, like, you know, for example, you're progressing, you're improving on your mic skills, which is something where, you know, you and I have had plenty of discussions about in terms of what needs to be done. So you're now then looking at progressing in the UK and making a name for yourself over there. The same goes for us. You know, now we're doing more with the on-demand. We've been in Fighting Spirit magazine. We've paid for the ads for that in order to get our product noticed. Now, hopefully, that sort of thing creates a little bit of buzz where people are coming to us. You know, like Vice magazine doing articles on MCW being, you know, air quotes, Melbourne's best kept secret. That's not something that I now have to try and sell people on, that, oh, we're doing these really good things. I promise it's really good. I promise it's a great watch. We've got other people who are now saying that for us.
Which is easier when someone else speaks highly of you instead of you saying, hey, I'm really good.
That is the ultimate seal of approval on hard work paying off. You know, for someone, and I don't want to speak for any of these guys in particular, but for a guy like Travis Banks, who went to the UK and was setting up rings and doing all that sort of stuff, to then be considered one of the fastest rising stars in independent wrestling and having people spruiking his name, working matches against guys like Pentagon Jr. and all this sort of stuff, like, that's the ultimate seal of approval. That means that what you're doing is on the right track. And that means that what you're doing is also at a world-class level. You know, it's something that everyone, A, strives for, or B, should be striving for if they're not already.
So, within your experience and my experience, picking up on trends, is that something that you've slowly done and implemented in MCW here?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it helps that I work in media away from MCW as well. So I'm always trying to keep my finger on the pulse of what's coming up, what's new, all that sort of thing. What can we do? What's a hot topic? What will get people's attention? And I think you kind of have to, you know, you have to be on top of your media distribution. How do you get the name out there? How do you use social media to your advantage? How do you get a little bit of buzz for yourself? How do you get noticed? What characters should you be doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And that's something that I do enjoy doing. You know, like even in terms of getting merchandise made up and all that sort of thing. Like, a lot of our MCW shirts is just parody stuff, but it's got to be something that people will feel comfortable with wearing in the street, rather than, you know, here's the MCW logo and here's a picture of all of our talent looking mean and fierce and all that sort of stuff. Big deal. Who gives a shit?
I'll put it to simple context of, I'd wear a band shirt if I go see a band, but I wouldn't wear a band shirt in the street and everything else. But that's just me. But I know a lot of people are proud about their music and what they go support, and they're the type of people that would wear it on the street. Same thing could be said in a wrestling context.
Your fans are your best form of promotion.
Yeah.
Especially if they love what you do and they want to represent you. Like, that is a huge compliment. like that is humbling. That's something that I'm very thankful for, and something which I'm really proud of that we're growing and growing, especially in the last year. So you've got to have them in mind when you're coming up with this stuff. Like, what is going to make your existing audience want to bring their friends or their family along? What's going to help spread the word? You know, it's kind of got to be on point. You can't be insulting everyone's intelligence too much with all that sort of thing.
Relating it back to the Progress, I know that we both read the Progress fan page, where it's a bit of a forum at the moment.
Yep.
Relaying it back to the early days of Australian wrestling when it was a bit of a forum. But you see how much they respect the fans. They take the fans' opinions. Fans will suggest internationals, and they'll turn it into, sorry, we pride ourselves on the lack of internationals. They'll always answer questions if anyone has them. Even if it's the same question such as, how much is a £15 ticket?
Yeah,
and it's
something as stupid as that. Yeah, yeah. Of course. And I mean, you know, like that's not so much being a good independent wrestling promotion or anything like that. That comes down to having good customer service. That's a basic life skill if you're trying to run a business where you're selling a product. You know, like I just said, you can't insult your fans' intelligence. And as frustrating as it can be sometimes, oh, when's so-and-so coming back? They're still not back yet. Blah, 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 blah. How much does it cost? It says on the website. You know, you've kind of got to accept that.
You can't be passive-aggressive.
No, of course. And I mean, you know, everyone's going to have an opinion, especially in this day of social media and all that sort of thing. Every prick's got an opinion. I've got an opinion. You've got an opinion. Lockie over there's got an opinion. And we have the power to tweet or Facebook or Instagram it out to our audiences and whoever follows us and all that sort of thing. The same can be said for, you know, your entire audience. Everyone can access your product and they can tell you if it sucks and they can tell you if it's good. You've kind of got to take the good and the bad. You're not going to get it right every time. And I think a lot of the times, you know, people get discouraged really easy and choose to react too quickly if someone or a group of people says something that they don't agree with.
It could come down to those people that take feedback and say, well, you're wrong, and they debate it, justify it, yeah, but, and everything else, instead of considering it as constructive criticism. So it comes down to the individual, I reckon. Whether it's the MCW product saying, oh, I reckon the lights could have been a little bit brighter, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, we launched the on-demand service, and, you know, like, there was one comment in there that said, you know, $8.99 a month is steep. And I looked at that, and I said, well, you know, we compare that to other products that are out there. Like, we respect your opinion, but what we're offering is a pretty reasonable price point compared with other promotions, compared to the work that goes into every show that we have and will continue to pump out, especially as more content is added. We're not going to then turn around and raise the price up. You know, it's something where how much does a fan expect to pay for independent wrestling content for a promotion? There's only going to be, you know, 100 or 150 shows all up that you're going to have access to, particularly in those sort of formative years, compared to 100,000 hours or whatever for, you know, a couple of dollars extra on the WWE network. It's not like we're a huge corporation or something like that, nor is any other independent wrestling company. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to go in there and just say, well, fuck you, you're wrong. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. It doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with it or other people are going to agree to it. But, you know, you don't insult them for it.
No, the selling point to me would be I interact with these local wrestlers, I see them, I see it live, I know how it is, I know when Brooksy goes for his kick off the apron, I know how it is live, so if I can re-watch it back, I know that experience.
It comes down to supporting independent talent. You can go buy, you can go buy a Metallica CD for the same price that you might go and buy some other rock or metal band that you've just seen, you know, at the hi-fi bar with 200 other people. Does that mean that you're being ripped off for paying the same price as this huge high-end product that you're getting? No.
It also means you can say you were one of the cool kids that got on it before it was cool and it picked up.
Well, yeah,
be a hipster with it. Yeah. Hopefully.
Especially in a hipster city like Melbourne.
Yeah, the hipster capital of the world, it feels like. But we've been reflecting on the last year and where we're progressing and where we're all going to, but within the first year, so we were touching on that briefly, and first year you came into play, was that at the Telemarine aspect still, or Dragonfly days?
When I came into play with MCW there had been two shows that were happening in the downstairs facility at Ballroom Brawl, which we now tend to use as a locker room when they're nice enough to give it to us and they don't have another small band or tiny little conference scheduled for down there. So that was when it was still ACW, and I don't want to dwell on this too much because I'm sure everyone's heard this story before. The shows weren't great. Dominic Kariya was the promoter and Tommy Hellfire was essentially booking the next generation of talent, you know, guys like Pitbull and Matt Silver and Trey and Laser and Jack O'Lantern, yeah, and all these sort of guys. I felt that the shows were lackluster, they didn't really have that much going for them, and that they didn't stand out from everything else that was being dished up in Melbourne. And given the venue that they had on hand, I felt that it should have been more. So rather than just kind of piss and moan about it behind people's backs or whatever after a show like other people do if they're not happy, oh yeah, you know, I'll just go in and get my money and then go home. I spoke to Tommy and I said, hey man, I'd love to offer my services creatively. He was nice enough to agree to it. You know, we'll give you a show or two and we'll see how you go. The first thing I did was bring in a carload of talent from New South Wales. I had Gene Kelly, Matt Diamond, Robbie Eagles, Ryan Eagles, Madison Eagles. I brought down the Fitness Maniacs the show after, and it was all these people who weren't really doing much else in Melbourne and weren't that prominent outside of their existing fan bases necessarily, but I thought this creates a lot of new exciting matchups and all that sort of thing. So the first show that I was involved with creatively was Ballroom Brawl 2010, which is ironically the first event on the MCW On Demand network. Good. even though it was still technically ACW. Dominic passes away 2 weeks before the show. So Tommy and I are sort of talking, and I'm like, well, do we still proceed? And he goes, yeah, we're still doing the show, like we're advertising. And it was a paid gig at the venue. So we continued with it. It went well. We had a return show locked in. Thornbury was, you know, happy because we were drawing slightly better numbers and all that sort of thing with each show. And yeah, with Dom not around, I said, well, why don't we change the name? Because I thought there was a little bit of stink attached to the ACW name, especially after decades of punch kick matches between guys who weren't really in that good shape or anything like that. You know, it was like, because you got to remember that ACW was sort of the follow on from the days of Festival Hall. And while the generation before us will wax lyrical about how good Festival Hall was, and oh, I remember Mario Milano and Jack Little and all these guys, that doesn't hold up in this day and age necessarily for a younger audience.
You would watch that these days, the Festival Hall shows, and you would appreciate it for the nostalgic value of it, but you wouldn't watch it religiously.
Yeah, look, I don't think much of that stuff's going to get on the Meltz star rating system, you know what I mean? And nor was anything from ACW. Well, ACW prior to those couple of shows in Thornbury, in the basement. So we changed the name to MCW, and it was just one of those things where we went, all right, cool, we don't have much risk. So I was involved, obviously, right from the start there, bar those two shows that happened in Thornbury. And, like, you know, there was a couple of shows at Dragonfly and all that sort of thing prior to that. But then once I came in, I joined up with Tommy, we called it MCW, and then, yeah, that was us. Like, we had Rowan then come in and be involved. Chris Fresh was involved in 2011. He left at the end of 2011. Rowan left halfway through 2013. Fresh comes back, whatever. We've got all the management changes and booking changes and all that sort of thing, which is fine. So, yeah, like, it was one of those things where everything was building up. We lost the Dragonfly venue because they were going to be demolishing it and turning it into parking for the airport. We kind of didn't know where to go. There wasn't much money in the company at the time. Like, I put the money up front to buy the wrestling ring that we still use today out of my own pocket. You know, and that ring had been used since Festival Hall. So it's it was a prick for the boys to be bumping in, and there'd be constant complaints of it sucks, there's no apron, the steering wheels on it just look so shabby and everything. And so we were really trying to push everything uphill because we didn't have any guaranteed venues anymore where we didn't have to worry about that. So we're running in Tullamarine. It's a cheap venue. We're trying to make ends meet with what we have. You know, those shows are still only drawing 150 people. Like, it's easy to look at it now and go, oh, everything's going pretty good, things are firing on all cylinders.
It felt like 150 people were trending at that time with all the shows in Melbourne.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it was just where things were at, and that's just how it was. So, you know, you look at it now and the shows aren't that great. I mean, we're up to the midst of the 2013 stage with the encore stuff, and you know, now all the stuff where it really starts getting good and building up, like, that's going to be the next lot of things that we upload in terms of the back catalog. And even when I look back at it, I'm going, oh man, it doesn't hold a candle to what we do now. And it would be easy to just kind of hide it from public eye and not put it up there, but to me, what's the point of that? Like, you've got to be able to look back at the journey and all that sort of thing as well. You've got to be able to appreciate the good and the bad that you've had. And that goes for wrestling, as like, for all the guys as well, you know?
It comes down to any industry, though. Any industry evolves over time.
Well, how do you learn from it otherwise? How do you learn from it if you're kind of just glossing over all the bad things and going, oh, well, we're pretty good now? Like, you know, you kind of want to have a point of reference as to, we're doing really good now. This is where wrestling used to be. This is where we used to be. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and all those other cliches. And you know, like, I'm sure now the Josh Shooter that's sitting here is vastly different to fat little Josh Shooter from 2012.
Varsity Project.
Yeah. Just bulking all the time, forever bulking at that stage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just kind of hoping for the best and coming out and kind of treading water a little bit. And, you know, like, it's all a learning curve. You're not going to get it right the first time, even though I'm still thrilled at at your gimmick that we gave you when you came in.
Yeah, and the Varsity Project on the big success that
was. Yeah, the Vanity Project. Which, you know, like, it was all right. Like, I look back at it and I go, it wasn't that bad. But, I mean, yeah, I don't blame Ryan O'Hare for taking the training class with Orlando Jordan over the booking that we had him locked in for now.
No.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, we've all taken different routes. And at the time, it's all...
Do your listeners know how you got the Axe nickname?
No, they don't.
Do you want to go into it?
Yeah, sure. So, it was my first ever... What it was I was trying to be a workhorse and do as many bookings as I can at the time then. Also relevant to now.
I'm going
to
fill in the gaps here with where I see things. Yep. So
I get a booking for Adelaide, and so myself, Ryan O'Hare, this guy that smells like tomato sauce called Shane, and Tempany from Canberra come down, and we're all driving down to Adelaide. Now, we get offered, hey, do you want to come down, do a dark match at MCW? Mm. Of course we do. It's at the Dragonfly. Yeah, I don't care. We'll be there as soon as we can. So, yeah, myself and Ryder here.
Because we would be doing tryout. I hate the term dark match for a show that's not on weekly television. A pre-show match.
Be a pre-show match just to test the talent, see where they're at.
Let's see what these guys are doing.
Would they get over with the crowd, stuff like that. So, myself and Ryder here come down there. We do like a few training drills that we do together, stuff like that. We end up with a flipping DDT. I still do it these days because it's pretty cool. But it ended up leaving me in a wedgie because my gear was made by Bayless, I think at the time, Weird, or whatever he calls it. And it was really thin material, and it made me look excited to be there. As I'm laying on the mat, looking up into the mirror roof of the Dragonfly Chinese restaurant, smelling nothing but black bean and regret.
So at the time, Julian, James, and Fresh are there at ringside, and they're sort of having a chuckle, and they're going, "Oh, it looks like his axe is showing, and all this sort of thing. It looks like he's got a bloody stiffy." So all of a sudden, then it just became, "Oh, like he wasn't that bad. Let's just call him the Axe, Josh the Axe Shooter."
Then it didn't drop for a while, and then I come out.
Even now, you're still called Josh the Axe Shooter on the promotional stuff.
And I tell people it's because I chop really hard, chop like an axe. Stuff like that, and they buy it. Whatever, you idiot.
No, it's because you got a hard on in your tryout match.
That's it. Hard on to be here. just loving life.
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Yeah, but, you know, like, we all go through stuff like this, and I mean, to be fair, you have sold a lot of merchandise and T-shirts that have actual physical
axes.
Weapon axes, battle axes printed on them. So, yeah. You know, like, you can't
based
be...
Based
you
off can't a dick
be,
joke.
You can't be too upset about it. And you should also probably be paying a couple of people royalties.
Yes. Based off a dick joke, I have brought a PlayStation 4, flights, and many other items along my way.
See? It's what you do with your axe that counts.
Yes.
Is the moral of the
it's
story.
It's not about how big your axe is or how small your axe is. It's what you do with your axe that counts.
That's it. That's it.
So it didn't matter if my axe was bulking or my axe was shredding. It's what you do with it.
This has taken a really weird turn.
Yep. But anyway, transitioning on, it was the Pipeworks show where it really picked up. Mm-hmm. So we had Pipeworks, which was kind of like a whole show of tryout matches.
Yeah, pretty much. With Paul London there, just because he was staying with us at the time and he had nothing else on.
So that's where I was going.
So it was
Paul London, out of all people, commentary. And I think it was you and Paul London that were on commentary and were doing MC that day.
Yeah.
And as I come out...
All this stuff will probably make the on-demand network once all of the shows go up.
Perfect.
Then there'll be little bits and pieces like this that kind of start filtering
exclusive
through.
Content that would never be released on DVD otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, as I come out, you're announcing Josh the Axe Shooter, you start doing a chopping motion. So, I replicate the chopping motion, and then the little kids in the front row are starting to do the chopping motion.
And I noticed it, and I remember I just came up to you afterwards, and I just go, Josh, you got to keep doing it. If you think you're doing too many axe motions with your hand, you're not doing enough. Whatever you're doing, double it. Like, every show, it's just like, keep doing it.
Keep chopping. It's working.
It's catching on. just because of a few snotty kids at Pipeworks. Whatever.
Yep. And now we're here.
Started from the bottom.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Speaking of here, here is currently backstage at Lucha. Now, tonight, are you doing the filming or production, or you have in the past at least?
I have worked with the Lucha Libre crew since we started. This will be the first show that I'm actually not sticking around for, just because I have prior commitments. But, you know, I understand the prestige and the honour of appearing on the Axe cast, especially now that you are going to go sow your wild oats overseas. So this is a really good chance for all of us here, isn't it?
Even speaking on the Lucha Libre promotion here, now that does involve your brief refereeing career.
Yes. So, in 2015, the promoter of the Lucha Libre events got contacted by a representative from Hublot Watches, who wanted to do some shows in a few little matches in Singapore. So, you know, said promoter, Tommy and yourself, Robbie Eagles, Carlo, and...
That was it?
Yeah, that was it.
A few Suicide Girls?
Yeah. A couple of Suicide Girls models who were involved in the shows and all that sort of thing. Everyone was heading over. It was like, well, you know, Mike, we want to bring you over with us as well. And I just go, well, why don't I just referee? So I actually went to Carlo's training school for a couple of weeks in the lead up to that. And I learned how to you know, count to three and all the rest of it. And, you know, like I joke about it now, but it's all that stuff, you know, being in the right place, kind of being invisible until you're needing to be there and all that sort of thing, and relaying messages and all that other stuff that refs do. So yeah, I
two matches strong so far.
I tell you what, I have refereed 2 out of 3 falls matches in Singapore. It's been an excellent career as a zebra so far,
and
there was an opportunity to go to China next week to do it as all over again. However, I will be promoting MCW in Essendon, so I won't be able to go and continue this worldwide career donning the black and white stripes.
I'll only referee if it's internationally.
Look, all I ask is for international flights paid, and I'll do it.
Yep. that is a reasonable enough request, I think.
If you want the best, you've got to pay for it. Poor Edwin. And the best rib of this is that then you put out your Nintendo parody shirt.
Yeah.
And you sent me a copy of it, and I just said, oh, you should just put me in there as a referee instead of Edwin. And then you did.
Because I had Juicy on it as a parody. I was like, oh, okay, well, this was just a default referee. Cool. May as well just throw some glasses on him and get the Mikey haircut. Done, and it worked. But my idea on doing the parody shirt
and
is...
you sold one extra to me.
Yep. I'll always give a shirt out to whoever's on it. I'll give them a little bit of coin, or I'll give them an incentive. If they require, like Dowie, I gave Dowie the leftover shirts that I didn't sell of me and Dowie, so he can make a little coin. I gave Juicy a few extra shirts so he could sell it, make some extra coin.
I got a free shirt out of it.
Whatever traction I do get, hopefully it does pass on. And then with yourself, it's like, okay, cool, I just had you on there, I'll throw you a freebie, something like that.
That's all I ask for. I'm happy wearing a 8-bit version of myself to work every now and then. Whatever.
Yeah, what of it? It's a sweatshirt.
Everyone's marks for themselves.
Cool. I'm going to wrap things up anyway because we did touch on the MCW then, now, forever. Yeah?
Yeah, keep it going if you've got more to ask.
No, I've shot my questions. I've touched on the then, now, forever. I've touched on the MJ's
goals for directions. The future?
Yeah, that's what you touched on. You said where you wanted the company going. Where'd you say you wanted to go?
Actually, I don't even remember.
You don't know where you want to go?
No, I don't know where I want it to go because there's no limit to how far you can go.
The limit does not exist.
There is no limit. It's like yourself. You're about to go overseas. How about we flip it? How do you feel about all this? Because you've done pretty well getting to this point. Do you feel ready?
Here's a stupid answer, though. I feel like...
I'll see through it if I think it's stupid.
Good.
I'll call you out on it.
You will. Every time. I feel like the first time I went over there, I was too stupid to be worried and too stupid to have anxiety because I didn't even book a return ticket the first time. I haven't even booked one this time. So I'm doing the same approach where I'm flying over. I was like, cool, I'll just wing it.
But you made a lot of contacts that first time.
Yep.
Like, you were there for, a few months or something like that?
Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah, 2 months. And you got onto one of the Progress Endeavor shows in that time. That's pretty good.
Yep.
So you were getting a little bit of momentum and then you come back. You came back better than before you left.
Yep.
Now you've grown from that level. You've gotten to this new level. And now you're going back over there with contacts that already exist, with a skill set that has vastly improved, bar a few little bits and pieces that you can work on, like your promos, which you are. And much more confident, though. And you've got a renewed confidence. Like, I wouldn't have been able to picture you doing a podcast even a year ago. You know what I mean? So, unless it has been going for that long, I've just never listened. So don't call me out on that. but now you're doing this. You have no return ticket. There's no limit to what you can do. You've got contacts already. Sky's the limit for Josh the Axe Shooter. Fair?
Yes, fair.
The same can be said for MCW. You know, and some of that comes through with the contacts that you've built over there. Like, I would have never been introduced to Jimmy Havoc and started talking to him had you have not been there and gone, here you go, guys. Hopefully you can do some business in the future.
Some business is my favourite term.
that's a sly wink to a few people. So it's something where everyone can benefit. You know, like, you're a good representative of what can be achieved here in Australia, and a lot of that comes through grafting and hard work. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're on the top level of the cards compared to, you know, like, with all due respect to yourself, compared to guys like Jonah Rock or Hartley Jackson or anything like that. But what you've done, you've rapidly improved in that time, and now you're leaving at a time when you can then go and improve on that. You can train a little bit more and fill in the gaps here and there if need be, which perhaps not all of it would necessarily be able to be as polished here, learning from bits and pieces or on the fly and all that sort of thing. And it's not to say that we suck over here in terms of training or we just produce people who can't cut promos.
On the flip side of that, though, with the training aspect and the Australian wrestling aspect, because as we've said earlier on, we're both proud of the quality of content Australia does have.
Yes.
A lot of people will say, you know what, I'm just going to go to Lance's for 3 months. I'm going to go to do America here for 3 months, or I'm going to go to England hypothetically for 3 months. But a lot of people forget that EPW with Damien Slater, David Storm, great training.
Yeah.
Even hitting up Carlo, just doing a boot camp down there, or Jonah Rock and AJ Istrio in Adelaide, they're great trainers for whenever Jag does return. That's great centres down there that a lot of people skip the fundamentals with these guys to learn elsewhere.
Yeah, this is going to sound a little bit disrespectful, but sometimes I feel like Australian wrestling, or the steps that it has taken, particularly in the last couple of years, has been in spite of itself.
How so?
A lot of people sort of go, if I want to get noticed, I have to go overseas. And yes, that does help. But now a lot of those people have come back, they have continued to improve, and they've raised the profile of wrestling here in general. And, you know, like a lot of the times, fans will only be interested if you go to a show and you see an ex-WWE castaway or an independent guy from the States or the UK or whatever on it. It's one of those things where if someone's putting out a good product, theoretically, it should command support. Like, it doesn't necessarily deserve it, but if you've got a product that's good enough, then it should command that level of support from your fan base. It should command a certain level of skill from your entire roster. So, for, you know, like, it's a lot of hard work, but some of that is certainly in spite of what has been the case, what is still the case in some parts of, you know, Australia with other promotions. You know, but I mean, in that same vein, it's good that everyone, it's good that the promotions that are doing well are creating more of a divide from the promotions that aren't doing so well.
Kind of like the Noah's Ark aspect of anyone that's good, let's get on board.
Yeah. But, you know, you just kind of hope that then people don't then turn around and go, well, I guess everything in Australia is good, because it's not.
There's bad wrestling everywhere, though.
Yeah,
I've done a lot
of
bad shows overseas as well, but once again, it was either paydays, or it was experiences, or networking with the right people.
It's always experience.
But
if it's good or bad, it's all experience.
Over here, I think in the time when you started becoming a booker at MCW, when WrestleRock was starting to fizzle out, that was still the same time when MPW was fizzling out and a few other promotions. So it feels like there was a transition between a lot of wrestlers hanging out the boots and a lot more starting and a lot more promotions going in the right direction.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just on the curb of something like that happening again.
Yeah, I think it's sort of something that's on the upswing. One of the things that is interesting, which I kind of have a key eye on, is the progression of the next lot of wrestlers in this country. I look at guys, you know, like Lockie, like yourself, like Emmanuel, you know, some of the other young guys here, and I can only speak for
those
people,
you know,
who are here. And I go, everyone's doing really good. Why, like, at what point do we then have, like, not have to rely on guys who are, you know, pushing on a little bit and have been carrying the ball for so long? Like, you know, you look at your Pete Dunne and your Tyler Bates and all these guys overseas, you've got all these guys who are under 25 who are becoming huge names. And you go, I wonder at what point that will be the case in Australia, where you've got all these younger guys who are just really, really hungry for it and focusing on every single bit that they can, you know, their look, their talking, their character, their presence, everything. You know, it's something that doesn't come overnight, but you've got all these people who are really hungry and are also trying to get to that next level and sort of get to that same level of presence and stardom and whatever else as some of these guys overseas, you know, even your Leo Rushes and whoever else.
Have proved it's possible.
Exactly. And there's no reason why that can't happen here if you're determined enough to get to that level. I hate the term reaching for the brass ring or something like that, which is why I'm deliberately not mentioning that up until this little side bit.
As an example.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because then, like, if you're reaching for a brass ring, that means that someone else is kind of creating that spot and is holding that spot over you. If you really want it that bad, you kind of have to push forward and get to that spot on your own and have that own personal revelation as to, this is where I should be, this is what I can be, so this is what I am going to work towards. Which is why, you know, I have all the respect in the world for someone like yourself who is about to set sail in a couple of days and you know, make a name for themselves overseas. It's why I've got so much respect for a guy like Lockie, who's just put out one of the most brilliant professional wrestling-related promos of all time.
I'll link it to this in
the musical with Crackerjack. You know, this is all stuff where people will get noticed.
I don't think a musical has ever been done before in wrestling. There's a few things in wrestling in MCW that are standing out, whether it's Preston and Payne's promos, the musical promos that Lockie Hendricks does, or even the way that Adam Brooks or Dowie James carries themselves as individuals.
I made the point to someone the other day that the most standard, quote-unquote, pro-wrestling promos are the vignettes that I'm creating as hype reels for the events. Like, those are the most, for lack of a better term, normal, standard wrestling videos that are going in MCW at the moment, because everyone else is going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole of creativity and coming up with all of this great stuff, which inspires and motivates me in turn as a promoter to continue providing the avenue for this sort of thing to grow and to flourish and for everyone to become, I suppose, stars in their own right.
It's more so checkmate creativity, Mikey.
I have never heard that term before.
Yeah. Okay, so checkmate creativity, Mikey. Try and one up that, where
Okay. The
musical would set the bar where I don't think anyone else is going to come close to doing it anytime soon, because through speaking to Crackers, he told me he spent weeks writing the script for it.
Of course.
He spent weeks creating the props. He had to use certain camera angles and edit it afterwards and work around availability, and it was just terrible to try and do. And he refuses to do another one for the next 2 months at least, so he doesn't have to put himself
through
it.
That's not that long.
Yes.
Like, by the time this gets posted, everyone will be going, all right, cool, so we've got about another 5 weeks, and then we'll see another one.
Yep. And hopefully there's another musical out there, because that musical was worked into the match, which was the best part.
You know what the funny thing is as well? Tommy and I have had discussions, like, because Tommy especially is driven and focused on coming up with these outside-of-the-box ideas for wrestling. Like, that's why now I handle a lot of the standard MCW stuff and he does a lot more of the Lucha stuff, because that gives him a chance to be more creative and come up with wacky ideas and maybe this will work and that will work and all that sort of thing, you know, which is why he's having a Star Wars May the Fourth Be With You theme match with Lockie tonight, because that's the sort of thing that he loves. And
I'm sure Lockie loves the Star Wars.
Oh, I'm so happy. I am so happy about
that. As you're sitting there in your rainbow Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched any of the Star Wars films. I don't care. Yeah, I know I'm not missing much. I don't get... Yeah. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, that's all this sort of thing that Tommy loves doing, and he suggested a musical as part of that, and even getting Crackers to be involved with it. And it was one of those ideas like, oh, yeah, that would be cool, and then we promptly forget about it because we had another show to prep for or something like that, and it just falls by the wayside as one of those could-have-been ideas. And now it's happened, which is awesome.
Well, that musical was funny because it was
You have to talk into the microphone.
Okay. Well, that musical was funny because I had been pitching for it for about 6 or so months.
Why were you so determined for a musical?
Because if I could sing or anything, I'd also be doing, like, theatre and all that. I just could never sing and all that. So I was like to Crackers, we need to do a musical, but it never really fit with storylines and all that. So then when eventually, you know, we did all this, we saw the opportunity, so it's very humbling to see how good of a reception it's got.
I'm not surprised, because A, it's different, and B, it's done quite well. It's like, I know that it's kind of meant to look like a high school theatre production,
yeah.
But it's done so well, and people catch on to that immediately, rather than, oh yeah, this is a bit shit, you know what I mean? Like, like the standards are so high that people can see exactly how it's meant to be perceived.
Mm.
And, yeah, and they can appreciate it for that, rather than, oh, yeah, this is really shit. Because it's not. It's fucking exceptional.
To go on what Mikey's saying, if it was filmed on an iPhone held horizontally, I'm sure people would see through it and be like, well, it was meant to look a bit shit, and it is looking a bit shit. This is shit.
although that said, some excellent promos have come out of Australia that have been shot on iPhones.
Yeah.
We would never have
any Elliot Simpson promos.
Yeah, we would never have the members of TM61 doing Gangnam Style, which is now a very dated reference, if not for Elliot Sexton's iPhone 4.
I'm ridiculously impressed. And that and his editing abilities.
Oh yeah. Like he's some of his editing stuff, and you know, he did Mortal Kombat promos and all that sort of thing, and all this sort of stuff. Like it's all such a big team collaborative effort, which is why I'm very proud to be at the helm of it, but I never really want to be seen as stifling people's creativity.
More so than encouraging.
Yeah. Like, I want it to be an encouraging place for people to kind of think outside the box, and we're not always going to get it right. You know, like, one of the things that people can watch is Seth Max coming back and beating up Tommy Hellfire. And my vision for him was that he would have a Bane mask and wear big cargo pants. And like, he was essentially going to look like Bane as this unstoppable monster, because he kind of looks a little bit like that.
As cartoonish as it is, and in a cartoonish world, it does work though.
It works. And, you know, it's something that people like look at and will probably go, especially younger members of the crowd, they'll probably go, that's kind of cool. But instead, the end result is something where I have Lockie hitting me up the other day going, so are you going to edit out the bit where Seth Max comes out dressed in blackface, looking like Al Jolson to beat up Tommy Hellfire? And it's like, no, I'm not, because I don't know how to cut that out from all of the shows, and we kind of need a reminder on how not everything that is conceptualized creatively plays out, especially when you're dealing with certain people. And that was one of the big misses. As soon as he walked out wearing that fucking face paint rather than the mask and everything else I'd pitched, Lockie's silent laughing, he's popped that much. As soon as that happened, I should have just nixed the whole angle and said, don't worry, Tommy, we'll find something else for you. But yet we persisted. And then he comes out in a mask the next show, and he takes the mask off as soon as he gets into the ring.
So it wouldn't be as bad as if he did the Aurora thing. I think that's what her name was, where she
had
the face paint of the mask.
Aurora was doing Asuka like almost 10 years before Asuka was. You know, in NXT and Kana in Japan.
Being oriental and just kicking the shit out of people. Yeah.
I'm not saying that she's the first Asian person in women's wrestling.
No.
But
with the mask and everything else.
Fucking hell.
Fuck.
Fucking hell.
All right, Lockie, come here. We were talking about goals, right? And
yeah, Lockie, what's your goal?
Besides MCW, Lockie.
Yes.
Come over a little bit more.
Yes, I'll come in this comfy couch.
You don't perform elsewhere, like the BCWs, and haul yourself out like other performers do. Mm-hmm. So what are your goals, if that's the sense?
My goal, they've changed since I started. When I started, it was all, you know...
Your first match.
Yeah. It was all, you know, those big WWE dreams and that. And they're still there now. But as I've gotten older and all that, and I've appreciated the creative side of things in wrestling, my goals come from more of leaving something I'm proud of behind. Mm-hmm. And also, I want MCW to become a company that people can make a living off. I want Australian wrestling to be this thing where people look at it and go, it's just a thing in Australia. It's not hidden, it's not a secret, it's just known that there's Australian wrestling.
And it's MCW.
Yeah, and it's an awesome thing.
Which is my goal as well, and it was encouraging when one of the guys who we've had here said, you guys are pretty much in the same spot that the UK was in 5 years ago. All you need to do now is keep pushing, be noticed by the right people, and then that's when things will really blow up.
Mm.
But yeah, sorry, that's... Apologies for the interruption, but
And yeah, there's still goals of international work and all that, but for now, I'm only 21, I've still got a lot of my life to live, and I really just enjoy what I'm doing now. I enjoy doing musicals and all that. I feel I've been lucky to have been teamed with Crackerjack and learned so much about, production, out of this world almost production with what we've had to do and building sets and all that. He builds all the sets. I don't do a damn thing, but he builds all the sets.
Can just imagine you trying to cut out cardboard knives just with little safety scissors.
Yeah, it'd be the worst. But even we were talking about it and we were just shocked that the first three dates were filmed in the same location, isn't it? it's a very awesome world. Wrestling.
And with precedent.
Yeah, and wrestling can be really good. Mm. It's just how much you want to put in.
Yes.
Which seems to be the underlying theme here.
Easy.
Come on, cousins.
Beautiful.
give us five.
Yeah, okay.
JXT, yeah. Fuck off, Josh.
Not a wizard.
Not on my watch. That's learning from the failures of Seth Max and going, no, JXT's not going to be a wizard on our shows.
I like JXT as a wizard. I'll point out.
That's more of a Shelbyville idea.
So,
I'm sorry, I love you, Josh.
People are coming in, so we're going to wrap it up.
Your final axe cast.
Final axe cast.
Who's your next talent going to be? Are you going to keep doing this while you're over there?
That's why I've got the laptop gimmick and everything else. Going to try and keep it as
You've
busy as I can.
You've got a lot of competition over there.
I know. The first show I'm over there, Matt Riddle's there, so I'm going to be like, yo, Mr. Matt, where are you staying tonight? Let's do a podcast. Yeah, so I'm going to pitch it. I'm going to see how we go.
You've got the Australian audience already. So.
Yeah, that's the idea.
People will be following you over.
The idea is people do backtrack on all these and then they listen to the old ones. And then
that's why I'm the freshest one. Like he's saved the best until last over here, so people hopefully hear this and go, oh yeah.
Hopefully they get a good booking and this drops the night before, stuff like that.
I just like that I'm in like the last 5 minutes of the final episode.
No, that's important.
Yeah, that's
important. Like if you're listening through the whole thing, you want to get to the good bit at the end.
It's kind of like when Vader realizes he's a baby face at the end.
Oh, that is my favourite movie. My favourite scene in all of Star Wars.
I thought you'd get it.
Good reference.
Good Star Wars reference.
Even though when they did the digital remastering and made Vader say no.
So yeah, Josh, just going back to the wrestling.
It's when they catch all the Pokemon there, Mikey. You got
very good.
Nothing to worry about.
Yep, cool. I like Pokemon.
Yeah, so
I liked it for the 2 weeks it was a thing.
So, recap. Recapping, wrestling is good, wrestling is fun. MCW Encore offers exclusive content. You've gone from being a fan to working into creative through managing international refereeing and road trips in between, whilst enjoying burgers with fine friends.
Like yourself.
With myself and young Lockie
Hendricks. And young Lockie. Beautiful. Wrestling is a good thing.
It is. It's an art form.
I genuinely owe a lot of my life and what I have now to wrestling. If I didn't make the contacts through wrestling that I did, I wouldn't have met my wife in the front row of the show. I wouldn't have found my way into media. Like, I've worked for 2 television networks and all that sort of thing in along the way, and I wouldn't have all of this if it wasn't for wrestling. Like, it's if you make the right contacts, you put the hard work in, you know, you get out what you put in.
Yep, the hard miles pay off.
That's it.
Beautiful. Let's wrap it up. Thanks for being a part of everything, guys.
Thank you, Josh.
I'll see you sooner rather than later, hopefully.
And all the best in your future endeavours as well. I wish nothing but the very best for you, and I look forward to keeping in touch while you're away through the social media.
Through the social media. Thank you very much.
JXT,
Fuck off, Josh.
Not a wizard.
Not on my watch.